Coming up, searching for signs of hope amid the destruction in Haiti. And one reason this couple conceived a second child was to get stem cells to save the life of their first child. It worked. But their church, the Catholic Church, says what they did is wrong. Plus, Eastern and Western Christians celebrate Easter. For the Orthodox, Pascha.
Christ is risen.
Christ is risen.
Christ is risen!
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're YourRetirementCompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Christians are celebrating Easter, the holiest time of their year. Jews have been observing Passover. In Jerusalem, thousands of Jews gathered at the Western Wall for a special blessing for Passover, the commemoration of the Jewish exodus from slavery in Egypt. And during Holy Week, Christians have been remembering Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. This year, the Western and Eastern Christian calendars converge, with both observing Easter this Sunday. At the Vatican, Pope Benedict XVI presided over several special Holy Week services. For the Catholic Church, the spiritual celebrations came amid troubling revelations of priestly sex abuse in Europe and inadequate oversight by some bishops. The claims have prompted many bishops to ask for forgiveness. Some top church officials have lashed out at the media for what they call biased reporting. In the U.S., a renewed focus on sexual abuse seems to have affected public perceptions of the Pope. A new poll from Gallup and USA Today found that Americans' approval rating for Pope Benedict has dropped from a high of 63% after his 2008 U.S. visit to 43%. Among American Catholics, it's fallen from 81% to 61% over the same period. At the United Nations, governments, development banks, and NGOs have pledged nearly $10 billion to help Haiti recover from January's earthquake. Leaders said the aid is intended not only to rebuild the country, which was impoverished even before the quake, but to transform it into a thriving state. Much of the relief effort will be overseen by an international commission. Still, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said Haitians will decide how the money will be spent.
Our goal must be the empowerment of the Haitian people. They are the ones who will carry on the work of rebuilding Haiti, long after our involvement has ended.
Of course, there are massive challenges to rebuilding Haiti, and the problems can seem almost insurmountable. But Haiti is a predominantly Christian nation, and for Christians, hope is a major theme during the Easter season. For this special report, our managing editor, Kim Lawton, traveled to Haiti to look for signs of hope.
About 20 miles outside Port-au-Prince, Layagon was near the epicenter of January's catastrophic quake. Roughly 80% of the city was destroyed. But at the Lamb Center Ministries Children's Home, they're still singing about joy. There doesn't seem a lot to be joyful about. The orphanage's main building was completely destroyed in the earthquake. Several staff members were killed in the collapse, although all of the 260 orphans who lived in the compound did survive. Now the children are sleeping in a tent city nearby, and they come here for activities during the daytime.
Hallelujah!
Pastor Jeannot de Seuss, who leads the ministry, is having a difficult time finding regular sources of food and water. He says he has faith that God will help them. He told me, despite it all, he still sees hope every day.
All of the kids is the hope of the country.
The kids are the hope of the country.
Yeah.
It's been almost 3 months since what people here call le tremblement de terre, the trembling of the earth. The evidence of destruction and death is still almost everywhere. But the traditional Easter message is that death doesn't have the ultimate victory. And this Easter season, many Christians who live here and those who are working here say they are clinging to glimpses of hope that resurrection will still come.
Amen.
Hope can be easy to miss in this massive tent camp of displaced people that has sprung up at the former Paysonville Country Club. Some 40,000 homeless Haitians now live at the bottom of the hilly area that was once a golf course for the wealthy. And that's just a fraction of the estimated 500,000 Haitians who still don't have adequate shelter. Catholic Relief Services is helping lead humanitarian efforts on the ground. CRS camp coordinator Nick DeHuey says getting food and water to the people has been a logistical nightmare.
This is about as complicated as a food distribution gets in terms of the logistics. It took us a good 2 days to figure out how to do it, and I think now we've got it down.
Because of the camp's terrain, big delivery trucks can't get in. They drive as far as they can, and then the supplies are transferred to smaller pickup trucks, which can maneuver their way further into the camp. When the pickup trucks get as far as they can, workers take the bags of food by wheelbarrow to the waiting families below. They can deliver USAID-donated cooking oil, flour, peas, and bulgur to about 7,000 people a day. Over several days, they provide everyone in the camp food rations that should last for a month.
The calculation is, for a family of six, it's a little less than 2,000 calories per person per day for 30 days. It's not a full ration. People need to complement it with some protein and vegetables, but at least it gives them a good calorie base.
While a camp DJ gives instructions and offers entertainment, thousands of people, mainly women, wait in line for hours in the blazing sun to get their rations. The camp has the women receive the rations, DeHuey says, because they're less aggressive than the men and less likely to start food riots. The camp also offers medical services, provided mostly by volunteer doctors from the U.S. and other countries. Conditions are not ideal by any means, but still, it's considered one of the most successful camps in Haiti. And people here are grateful for it. This woman told me, we don't have a good government, so it was a grace from God that the other nations came to help us. CRS and other relief groups are also working on long-term recovery plans. But it's hard to get to that when meeting immediate needs is still such a huge undertaking. The magnitude of it all can be overwhelming. But DeHuey says, for him, hope gets defined in the small moments.
Just the other day, there was a man who lost his leg during the earthquake. He was a recent amputee. He couldn't stand in line. He's the head of his household. He doesn't have a wife. And, you know, we can pick him out of line and we can help him through the system. And 5 minutes later, he walks off with a food ration and people with a wheelbarrow help him with that. Those are very little things, but...
He says he tries to focus on what has been accomplished, not on what still needs to be done.
I come home at night and I'm grumpy and crabby, and I have a colleague slapping me on my shoulder saying, you know, whatever happened today, 7,000 people are eating tonight because of the work that you did today, and that helps.
At Hôpital Adventiste d'Haïti, the Adventist hospital in the suburb of Carrefou, issues of life and death are still very much at the fore. The hospital was built in 1978, but it had struggled in recent years until being adopted by Adventist Health International and the Loma Linda University School of Medicine. Within days of the quake, Adventist doctors came rushing in from the U.S. and around the world. There's been an outpouring of donations, and the hospital has now become one of the best facilities in the country.
Unfortunately, we're still dealing with quake-related trauma that has yet to be cared for. We're doing orthopedic surgery right now downstairs on cases that have not been treated, fractured hip, fractured femur. In addition, there's lots and lots of follow-up care.
Loma Linda Assistant Professor Andrew Hagland is the acting hospital administrator. He arrived 6 days after the quake and is not sure how long he'll stay.
It's very, very difficult. You're seeing things and exposed to things that you would never see at home. We start the day with prayer and we end the day with prayer, and pray all day long for the safety and for the healing of this nation.
With all the earthquake-related orthopedic injuries and amputations, the hospital is specializing in prosthetics and rehabilitation. and the Americans are training Haitian doctors to carry that work into the future.
That's where I see the hope, that we can make a difference, and hopefully we are bringing light to this nation where hope is rare.
Ça va bien? Oui?
The faith-based medical ministry Cure International has been supporting work at the hospital and helping to coordinate volunteer medical teams. Phil Hudson is directing Cure International's efforts here. He, too, defines hope by each person who is helped.
You say, okay, regardless of this list, regardless of I've got 20 hours of work to do tomorrow, plus whatever comes up tomorrow, it all comes back to this child is good, and they've been touched by the love of God, even if no one ever says anything to them about God. And that's what does it for me.
Hudson worries that American concern about Haiti is already starting to wane.
It's a shame for our country to allow something like this to exist in our hemisphere, so close to our shores. And it's been a shame for years. And if we don't stay with it, it'll be a big blot on us.
But he's determined to see that new life does come.
If we only leave Haiti the way that it was before the earthquake, we will not have done a good job. And so everything that we're doing needs to be for the long term. And I am hopeful that we can leave things better than they were before.
The Haiti Gospel Mission Community Church is about 45 minutes outside Port-au-Prince. The building did sustain some damage in the earthquake, although not severe. Church leaders say they're not only going to repair, they're going to make the church even stronger and more beautiful than it was before.
Pastor Alison Bien-Aimé says the earthquake has actually strengthened people's faith.
We can see and a visage and the face of the Haitian people, their experience, their hope. Because when you talk with them, all people and swear you, I live because Jesus loved me.
Pastor Ellison says the support from around the world has helped his people see a new vision for their nation.
He feel Lord have a dream for this country. And then we are not sad.
And some signs of the new vision are already starting to take shape. As the choir practices on Monday morning, the sounds of construction are in the background. I'm Kim Lawton in Haiti.
The man who killed the well-known abortion provider, George Tiller, was sentenced to life in prison. Scott Roeder had been found guilty of first-degree murder for last year's shooting in Tiller's church. We have a story now about whether it's ethical to create human embryos that will save a child's life, but at the cost of destroying most of the embryos. A Catholic family, the Trevinos, had a baby son who was dying. Their doctor said the only way to save the boy would be to create embryos, choose a healthy one, implant it in the mother, and then, after the new baby comes, take cells from its umbilical cord and transplant them to the sick brother. But leftover embryos would be destroyed eventually, and the Catholic Church says each embryo is a sacred human life. Betty Rollin reports.
Andy Trevino took to his new baby sister, Sophia, from the start. And in more ways than one, she took to him. One of the reasons Sophia was conceived was to save her brother's life. Shortly after Andy's birth, he got sick, very sick. His immune system just didn't seem to be working.
He started having very rare infections of his central nervous system, infections of his stomach, infections of his lungs.
The Trevinos were desperate for a diagnosis, which they weren't able to get in Mexico City, where they lived. They wound up at the Children's Hospital in Boston and learned that Andy had a rare genetic mutation called NEMO that was causing his immune system to fail.
We decided to keep him safe with antibiotics and a lot of medicines, about 13 different types of medications, and then to try to find a compatible donor for a bone marrow stem cell transplant.
But they couldn't find one.
One day, one of the physicians came to our hospital room and told us there's always the option of having another baby. And after birth, we could use the umbilical cord stem cells for Andy.
And that's what you did.
That's what we did.
It wasn't difficult for me to take this decision because we always wanted another child. And to know that this other child was going to be able to save my son's life, it was exciting.
IVF, in vitro fertilization, was the only way to create an embryo that would be free of the genetic mutation that Paulina carried. It took 36 embryos to get a big enough selection to achieve success.
There was no way to cure Andy without the decision of the family to have another child whose cells matched Andy's. And indeed, by performing in vitro fertilization and selecting for the tissue type, they were able to have a child whose bone marrow could cure Andy.
And now Andy is well, and he has two sisters, Sophia, and most recently, 9-month-old Tanya. The family lives outside of Boston, where Andres has a job with Children's Hospital. The Trevinos are Catholic. The Catholic Church believes that life begins at conception, that creating embryos through in vitro fertilization, which is what the Trevinos did, is wrong. Richard Dorflinger with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops believes that each embryo deserves respect.
We're talking here about life, about a human life at a very, very early and undeveloped stage, but human life nonetheless.
Dr. Daly disputes that an embryo in this stage is a human life.
We're talking about the first 3 or 4 days after conception, when the human embryo is a tiny ball of cells, between 50 and 200 cells. It's a speck smaller than the period at the end of a sentence. You need a microscope to see it.
The church also believes the destruction of embryos to obtain embryonic stem cells for research is immoral.
When we're talking about stem cell research, we're talking about a way to destroy that life, cut it off at a certain stage for the benefit of others. We think that's wrong to do that.
But Lewis Genin, professor of ethics at Harvard Medical School, says that the research is not only not wrong, it would be wrong not to do it.
It's a biological fact that those embryos outside of a womb can't mature beyond about 2 weeks. Knowing that, we have to take account for moral purposes of the duty of beneficence, the duty to come to the aid of those who suffer if we can do so without unreasonable burden.
In a document called Dignitas Personae, issued by the Vatican in 2008, the Church reiterated its existing ban on IVF and on the destruction of embryos for stem cell research, which is not to say that there are not individual Catholics, like the Trevinos, who choose not to follow the Church's teachings. Dr. George Daly directs stem cell research at Children's Hospital in Boston and is a leader in the field.
Stem cells are part of what we call regenerative medicine because stem cells are involved in the natural repair and regeneration of our tissues. They teach us an enormous amount about the disease process, but they give us this possibility for regenerating tissues, and that's why they're of such tremendous scientific importance, but also potential medical value in the future.
Because of that, the Trevinos decided to donate their remaining embryos to Dr. Daly's lab.
This decision that we took saved the life of my son. It gave us a beautiful daughter, actually two beautiful daughters, and it allowed us to hopefully help other people with these cells that have been created at the lab.
We succeeded in generating 2 embryonic stem cell lines, one of which carries the precise gene defect that affects Andy. That line is enormously valuable to us.
But Catholics and others who think the research is immoral favor using adult stem cells.
You're going to be splitting
Dr. Daly studies adult stem cells, but believes the use of embryonic stem cells is crucial.
If we want to understand the earliest stages of human development, how we lay down all the different tissues, then we're best to study these early embryonic or pluripotent stem cells.
Now that the Obama administration has allowed federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, there are many more stem cell lines available. But scientists are still barred from using embryos to create new stem cell lines with federal funding.
And there's a pipeline of hundreds of lines waiting for approval. So the policy is in place, but it's going to take months, maybe a year or more, to implement it. So there's still a certain delay and frustration.
As long as some people believe that an early stage embryo is a human being, the moral battle over embryonic stem cell research will continue. Meanwhile, Andy Trevino has benefited from stem cell therapy, and others with his disease will benefit from the stem cell lines donated by his parents. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Betty Rollin in Sudbury, Massachusetts.
Finally, on our calendar, as we noted, Easter or Pascha is this weekend for both Western and Eastern Orthodox Christians. Because of differing church calendars, the two branches of Christianity often celebrate Easter on different dates. But as Kim Lawton reports, their celebrations reflect shared beliefs about the Christian faith.
Christ is risen.
Christ is risen.
Christ is risen.
You must believe that Jesus Christ is risen from the dead.
During Holy Week, churches around the world echo the familiar refrain that proclaims a central tenet of Christianity. Jesus Christ was crucified, died, and was buried, but 3 days later he rose from the dead. Eastern Orthodox and Western Christians alike say celebration of the resurrection is the most important event on the church calendar.
This is the victory of Jesus Christ over sin, over death. It's what sets us free. In comparison, Christmas is not that important. You know, we like Christmas, everybody does, but the whole point of our salvation is embodied on Pascha.
This is the very center of what we believe, of who we are, of what our identity is, of why we continue to return to the Lord in joy. Without Easter, there is no church.
Many Christians begin celebrating the resurrection Saturday night before midnight.
It's the celebration of darkness and light. You know, the church starts in the darkness, and there's that light of a single candle, which then is spread out all through the congregation. It's a real celebration of the hope and the meaning that the resurrection of Christ brings to our lives.
In many Orthodox traditions, the service spills out into the street, processing outside the church.
We sing over and over, Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and upon those in the tomb, bestowing life. We'll say it over and over, shouting it out, rejoicing at what Christ has freed us from and what he's freed us to.
Some Protestants also gather in darkness in a pre-dawn Easter sunrise service. Others gather later Sunday morning with joyous pageantry and celebration.
Easter should be for us a genuine joy, not just in our minds, but also in our physical experiences, that for a while death was all that existed. But coming with Easter is this remarkable, surprising grace that death is overcome. Christians say to one another, "He is risen," and the answer is, "He is risen indeed."
And despite differing traditions and rituals and even days of celebration, church leaders say that is the ultimate and unifying Easter message. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. Happy Passover and happy Easter. We'd like to hear from you. You can follow us on our Facebook page. We also have much more on our website. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, Easter music from Washington National Cathedral.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.